And now, our feature presentation.
The best in the world is right here, right now.
Whether you like it or don't like it, pal, learn to love it.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Welcome. All right, listen up.
Now it's our time to step forward. It's time to bring the NWA back into the spotlight.
I was thinking that it might be a good idea if you and I formed an alliance.
Let's get ready to rumble!
To the greatest wrestling program in the world.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? Stop what you're doing and listen.
It's the Alliance Guys podcast with your hosts Kevin Frazier, DKM, and J-Cap.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Alliance Guys podcast, a presentation
of Alliance-Wrestling.com, your number one source for news and information for the National Wrestling Alliance. My name is J-Cal, and with me is the effervescent and handsome DKM. Welcome to the show, DK. How are you, my friend?
I'm fine, but did you go Russian for about 30 seconds or something?
I was in New Mexico this weekend. That's possible I might have become Russian.
Why not?
If European, you better not be a Russian. This is the Alliance Guys podcast. Again, a presentation of Alliance-Wrestling.com. We come here in peace, but we come here to talk NWA. We're here to talk wrestling with you. We're here to talk about NWA power. We're here to talk about the results of what happened in Charlotte this past weekend. And we're also here to talk about the news coming out of AEW. What's going on with that place? And most of all, we're here to talk with you, our NWA fam. You guys are a welcome part of the show. We're here to talk wrestling. We're here to talk with you. In the house, we've got Wrestling with the MMA. We've got Terry McDermott. We've got Kikuchi. And we've got the man formerly known as James H. Jackson Jr., simply known as James. Welcome to the party, pals. DK, how are you, brother?
Well, if I was any better, you would know I was lying because work is killing me, literally.
I could see that look of dread in your face right now.
For those of you who don't know, in the real life world, I'm a system admin, and we're replacing our financial software where I work. And we go live with the new software Monday, and I got a ton of things to do between now and then. I will probably be working after I get off this. I'll probably work all day tomorrow, and I'll probably work most of the weekend. And then Monday the new play starts and the world dies.
All right, well, there you go. Terry McDermott says his ex-wife is Russian. Like, was she from Russia? Did she have like that Russian accent? Because that might be amazing. It also might be the worst thing ever. I don't know.
You like Russian accents? Is there something you're not telling us, Jay?
I like all accents, to be honest with you. Especially Southern accents. Girls with the Southern drawl.
Southern drawl? Girls with the Southern drawl.
Everyone in New Mexico... I think I figured out why you like New Mexico so much, DK.
Everyone...
Everyone, not just women, everyone in New Mexico had a very Southern hospitality, but not in the South. It was very like a paradox. I didn't feel like I was in the South, but I felt like I was in the South. If that makes any sense at all.
Okay, now that we know that Jay's lost his mind, what are we talking about this week, Jay?
I was in an RV for 7 days, guys, but I'm here.
That's why you lost your mind. Nobody's questioning that it's not legit that you've lost it, but we know that you have.
Now, you might be onto something. Wrestling with MMA would like to remind you to like, share, follow, subscribe, This is a show for the fans, by the fans of the National Wrestling Alliance, and we're here to talk first and foremost about NWA Power and the Champion Series. Now, last week, we spent a lot of time speculating about what was going to happen with this Champion Series. They spent an entire hour on determining who would be a part of the show, where they would slot in. They made a whole episode pairing partners together and a draft. And although it was very entertaining as far as I'm concerned, it wasn't a wrestling show. And I was a little bit insulted that it was released on YouTube as quickly as it was. Now, I get why they do that. But again, I don't feel like a show that we paid for should be dropped on YouTube as quickly as it was. DK, first of all, what did you think about that? That show ending up on YouTube as quickly as it did?
Well, it's kind of like you. It's like, wait a minute, I paid for this. So, why are you getting it away for free just a few days later?
And then, on top of that, though, what they did get this week was a pretty dang good episode of Power. I'm going to say it right now. I was very happy with the amount of wrestling. They didn't have to do a lot of promos to put the show over. Although, I kind of missed having a little bit of podium work with Kyle Durden, or having Mae Valentine in the back doing some backstage promos. What we did get is some of the champions on the legends, and I'm gonna do quotation marks, legends on during the broadcast as part of the announced team. But we got several matchups. We got Team Idol and Camille versus Team Aaron and Taryn, and that was Latimer versus Marche Rocket. We also got Team Pope Sky versus Team Aldous and Melina, and that match gave us Genocide versus Sky Blue, a match we've already seen, but a pretty good match nonetheless. Then we would get Team Aldous and Team Melina's Fred Rosser taking on Team Pope and Team Sky's Murdoch. And then, did I forget a match? Oh, yeah, and then we also had Aaron and Taryn's JTG versus Idol and Camille's Mims. So, I mean, it was a very solid week of wrestling. There's no doubt about it. Right off the bat, what did you think, DK?
Of course, more wrestling, the better for me. I'm a wrestling fan. So, I thought they put on four really good matches. I mean, I didn't have a problem with any of the matches they put on. You certainly can't say much bad about any of them. So I like that. I understand a little bit the talk about how there wasn't really any interviews or any backstage thing. And I kind of get that. Like I say, shows like this should probably be about 50-50. Or, 40-60 in favor of the wrestling. But because of what they're doing with this championship series, which I'm still not 100% sure on what they're doing with this championship series, it works for that. Because there's not really a lot of talk that needs to be done. They've had, during all the matches, somebody was out at the announce desk. One of the team leaders was out there, either the champion or the legend. And so, they were talking through why they pick who they pick and why they're doing what they're doing, stuff like that. So, I mean, I think that was in place of the interviews. And so, I mean, it worked for me for what it was.
So with that being said, I see a lot of you guys are starting to leave comments. So let's, we like to include you guys in the show. That's part of the charm of this whole thing. We like talking to you guys. This show is, I don't want to say we're the most interactive show on the planet, but we do like to include you guys in our conversation because that's what makes this fun for us. It's a big giant group discussion. Just DK and I have the cameras rolling. I do see Kikuchi asked if I ever had my mind, and that's debatable. Next up, Sean Mega says, are they building towards the NWA 73rd? And that's a great question, because I think the short answer is no, right? I mean, they've made no mention towards the pay-per-view other than the commercials that they run, but there's nothing so far indicated in the programming. They haven't mentioned Empower. They haven't mentioned the 73rd, only in passing through those commercials for Fight. So, no, they haven't really built it up just yet, but there's still a lot of time, too. I mean, the pay-per-view is just about a month away now, and they have the next 4 weeks to build up to it.
Well, let's remember also, you know, I've said this before, because of the way that they film, I don't really think they know what their pay-per-views are fully. I mean, I think they have a general outline, a general idea, but I don't think they fully know what their pay-per-view is going to be when they're recording this. They're recording it 3 months beforehand.
And that's a great point, because you got to imagine when they recorded this, they hadn't even had their press conference yet at the Chase. They didn't know which talents are going to be available to them 3 months ago, right? I mean, I imagine finding out that Deonna Purrazzo would accept the offer to be on the show wasn't hammered out until just recently. And whichever legends or talented female wrestlers that end up a part of this show, as well as some of the fresh faces that we're going to get at Empower, I gotta imagine that a lot of these a lot of these names weren't signed on the dotted line when they were putting the show together.
And, you know, we've seen how from taping to taping, there are people that come and people that go.
For sure.
And so I don't really know. As we talk about the show, I'll talk about some of my thoughts and some things that may be done to help set up stuff, especially by people who aren't in the championship series. I think it's hard for them to do a complete sell. Because, I mean, let's be honest, you don't want to build Slice Boogie up for the main event if he may not be able to return.
I mean, that's a great point.
And although he only went to MLW and he possibly could return, it doesn't, you know, you don't know that at the time.
Right.
Because he could have gone to AEW.
Right. Let's get to some more of these comments before we get to the actual show, because I see a lot of good comments in here. Jimmy LB's here. What's up, Jimmy? Dave Scooby says, maybe have a short interview or video packages of the wrestlers involved in the matches and how they feel about their team. Add a few minutes to the program. I mean, I think that's a great idea. I think that would certainly add a little bit more bulk to the program. I think you would get a little bit more filler. I mean, they don't have to have a show that's packed with only matches. I like it. It's kind of funny, right? We're walking this thin line because we would criticize when we had matches, shows with not enough matches. And now we're saying, hey, this maybe would benefit from a little bit more promo work. But, I mean, there's got to be that happy medium, right, TK?
Well, let me, first of all, go on record as saying, if you're going to go one direction or the other, more action is always better.
That's fair.
So if you're gonna overdo something, more action is always better. Now, especially since interviews are good, interviews are really done more to talk people into the building. That's what interviews are for. That's what the promos are for, is you gotta talk the fans into the building. You know, back in the day, and I'm not saying, bang, and I'm not saying they should do it like this anymore. But, you know, back in the day, it wasn't uncommon for the world champions to actually be kind of tall. I mean, Dory Funk, Jeff Briscoe, even Luke Fez, you know, that they were more tall guys. But it wasn't their their job was to be the champion and to make the challenger look good. It was the challenger's job to talk the people into the building by saying, I'm going to win the title and you need to believe in me and I need you there and stuff like that.
Yeah, for sure, right? That's 100%.
And, you know, if you ever watch a lot of the old WWE, like from the Gardens or from Boston, from, you know, Philadelphia or whatever, they're rarely interviews. They're very few. WWE did very, or WWF did very few storylines. It was only at the top. Most of their matches were just put together matches, an undercard. Because again, like I was talking about last week, nobody cares about the undercard. You care about the main event. And so, you know, that's for what this is. They got people out there talking. It's just during the match.
Right.
And they can add to the match and they can explain things. I got a gnat flying around me.
That's no good.
So we don't need it. But if you took away the championship series, again, if you can get it right around 50-50 to 40-60 in favor of wrestling, you know, you'd be putting on a good show. And if they start doing house shows, and we've talked about this before, they may have to, if they start doing house shows, they're going to have to adapt their schedule.
Oh, for sure.
For tapings. Because you're not going to be able to promote the house show that's 3 months away. So,
well, let's get to more of these comments real quick, and then we'll start talking about the card. Again, you guys are killing it already, but I don't want to forget you guys, but we also want to get to the show too. But Ron says, I don't really care about who wins the championship series. I'm just happy they are finally moving the gears of character interactions to maybe create a story. I think that's I kind of like that too. See, the thing about the champion series is it's allowing them to kind of hit a reset button without really changing up the whole show. They're allowed to kind of change up who the characters are, and you could definitely create some storyline out of this. I mean, you know, with the team that Aaron and Taryn put together, you could see some conflicting personalities that might lead to some infighting, or the team that Aldis put together seems to be almost zero cohesion so far. And then you got Pope and Sky's team, who look maybe might be the odds-on favorite. Maybe there might be some tag teams breaking out through there. You just don't really know. And so things could change very quickly. DK, do you have any thoughts to that?
No. I stopped thinking.
Kakushi said, don't worry, Sean. We'll get a card about 7 days before the pay-per-view.
That's very generous. It's normally like two.
Yeah. Sean Vega says, if they can't film monthly, maybe they should reconsider doing a weekly TV show. You know, I think if you were to ask the fan base right now, I think they'd rather have some content as opposed to no content. And James says, this is the way it's going to be based off of how they tape. The only people that are guaranteed are the few under contract. Sorry about your bad day, Jimmy. Glad you're here. Hope this helps take your mind off things. Kakushi says that Dangerous Adrenaline Wrestling Gladiators out of Glassboro, New Jersey, they book talents for events months ahead of time. How about booking the pay-per-view matches and then bring the talent in for TV based on the pay-per-view to set it up?
That's more what they should do. By the time they get to the pay-per-view, they should have already booked the next pay-per-view. I mean, they should already have at least the major matches. I mean, look, nobody cares what the opening match is, all right? Can I be honest? So you don't need to announce the opening matches or every match on the card. But what you do need is, if my world champion's going to be wrestling, I need to know against who. My tag team champions are going to be wrestling, I need to know against who. And the truth, about 3 days out is really when the card should be put together. So, I mean, they should have it booked, the main things for the next pay-per-view at the pay-per-view they're doing. And then they should start developing the stories in the TV shows. And then you time it, so about 30 days out, that's when you're announcing matches. Well, we're going to have, you know, the NWA World Champion defend his title against, you know, Jimmy Joe Bob. And we're going to have the World Tag Team Champions defend their titles against the Ding Dongs. And, you know, the Women's Champions. And that's something you can go, the Women's Champion is going to defend her title against, you know, the winner of a tournament that's going to be held, you know, the week before on TV. Or 2 weeks before at a card on, you know, in Gary, Indiana. You know, kind of like the Duke. You can do some of that, but there should be building. Even then, we sit there and know, hey, you know, there's four tag teams that are going to be competing. There's eight women who are going to be competing to be in this. And, you know, I want Sky Blue to win because, you know, she shows off a lot. And, hey, you brought it up. And
not on the air.
It doesn't matter. You still brought it up to me.
Fair enough.
And if you don't know what we're talking about, good. It's just, you know, that's what you do. That's how you build. That's what you get things in. You know, someone pointed out, someone pointed out on a question to Jim Cornette that Magnum TA's car wreck was 44 days before Starrcade. And most people believed he was scheduled to face Ric Flair. Despite what anybody said, Dusty Rhodes, Ric Flair, whoever, and all the tributes to Magnum, he was not going to win the title that night. That was going to be the start of his program between them, because they'd only faced each other in one-offs and not really in the Carolinas. So, you know, you don't need to be saying 3 months out what the card is, but you need to know what it is. You need to build to it. And 30 days out, you need to start telling us what the matches are.
Yes. Absolutely. So let's get to it, right? So the kickoff of the team, the champion series, again, kind of what they told us is that each champion will have immunity from any other challenge if their team wins for an entire year. So when it comes to Camille's team, because she is technically not able to compete for any of the other titles, if her team wins, then their woman on their team, who I believe is Kenzie Page, will not be able to challenge for the women's championship for an entire year. And then with the rest of the rosters, the way it's set out, that, you know, if Aldis's team wins, then nobody on his team can challenge for the world's heavyweight championship. Or perhaps like on Pope's team, he could cash in if his team wins, and he could actually get a title match either for the tag titles or for the national title or for the world heavyweight championship if he chooses. So that's kind of like the benefit for the team captains. For the wrestlers, there doesn't really seem to be any kind of real reward, except for, you know, just getting more exposure, I guess. And then each victory counts as 5 points for the winning team. A disqualification victory will add 3 points to the team. And then I missed the other one. Did you see it? What was like a... If they lost, they just don't get them.
2 points each.
Say that again?
A draw is 2 points each.
Okay. So a draw, time limit draw, double disqualification, assuming that would be 2 points. So they have the scoring system set up, and we did actually see some separation between the teams where, you know, there's a team that has 0 points and a team that has all the 10 points. But it started off with Team Idol and Team Camille's Tom Latimer taking on Aaron and Taryn's Marche Rocket. This was a pretty fun match. I know that word gets tossed around a lot, but you know, ultimately when I see Latimer on the card, I think Latimer's going to go out there and destroy somebody. You know, we've referred to him in the past as the Tasmanian Devil because he's just so intense. You know, he's Kevin Frazier's favorite wrestler right now. And Marche Rocket looked really good in this match. I was very impressed with how he carried himself. You know, he's been mostly used like as enhancement, but in this match he looked really good. DK, what were your thoughts on this match?
I enjoyed it, and as I said again, I enjoyed all the matches. And you're talking about Rocket looking good, and I think that was a key. Nobody looked bad. Nobody sucked. Mm-hmm. None of the matches sucked. None of the wrestlers looked bad. I mean, you can nitpick things, and if our former co-host, the now fired Kevin Frazier, was... maybe I wasn't supposed to bring that up. Anyway, anyway, as I was saying, you know, you could nitpick things, you could look at things, you go, oh, well, this could have been done better, or that could have done better, although for me, there wasn't a lot that was anyway close to that. So, you know, it was a solid match. Rocket looked better than I thought he would. And Latimer won like we knew he would. And it was exactly what it should have been. This is the type of match that Power should put on. I mean, this is exactly the type of match that Power should put on. So, you know, I see Terry go, Tom winning was not a shocker. No, and it shouldn't be. You know, it was exactly what it should be. The right guy won, but it was a good match. And, you know, Marche looked better than he has in other matches. And so he comes out stronger because we all knew he was going to lose, but he looked competitive, or at least somewhat competitive. You know, he wasn't just crushed in there.
No.
So, you know, good for him, good for Latimer, good for the... whoever put that together. Good match. I enjoyed it. It was two big men doing big men things. That's what wrestling is. Wrestling is big men doing big moves and big whatever to them without looking like they're having a fight. My son is 22. And he's gone to some wrestling events with me. He's not necessarily a big fan, but he kind of likes to go occasionally to the live events. And one time he saw me watching some old Mid-South from what was then the WWE Network. And he stopped. I was watching on the big TV. And he stopped and he watched a little bit. And he goes, you know, those guys look like they're actually competing. And, you know, then just kind of went on. And that's what this looked like. This looked like two guys who are actually having a sporting contest. So, yeah, I can't hear you.
Sorry about that. Somehow my mic got muted. What I really also liked about this match is that even though Latimer's one of the bigger dudes on the roster, I mean, he, muscular-wise, body-wise, he's really fit. He's very well put together. But Marche didn't look like miniature next to him. They looked very equally sized. And I know Marche is not in the same peak condition that Latimer is. He still looked pretty good. And I was very happy to see that matchup. Of course, Latimer wins with a stunner, and I thought that was pretty cool too. I don't think I've seen him use that move yet as a finisher. So that was kind of neat. And then just going to some of the comments I saw, NWA Gold said the 3-point DQ makes no sense. If there's a pinfall, why wouldn't the about to lose team Lumberjacks interfere and cause a DQ? Better than the winning team getting 3 points and not five, right? That's a great point. That's an amazing point.
I actually thought that myself. It seemed like negative points you could go to whoever got it. I guess what I'd do, if there's 5 points available, 3 points to the winning team for the DQ, negative 2 points to the team that got DQ'd. There were a couple of comments that were up a little bit higher that I want to kind of grab real quick. John Mega points out NWA 73 is almost sold out without a card. Props to them for that, and I agree. They've really hit the nostalgic area in a place that's obviously very thirsty for it.
It was a smart move.
That's a very smart move. You can only do that so many times in a given era.
Yep.
So, I mean, that's one thing. The problem that they're having with their pay-per-views, they've had with all of them recently. So, smart to go to St. Louis. They've got a huge support from the community in St. Louis. I would love St. Louis. You better put on a great show. You better put on a St. Louis show. And you better not expect everybody to be back in, you know, next time if you don't. So that was one. Dave Scooby says tape every 6 weeks, give them time to adjust if needed. Have a pay-per-view every 3 months to highlight championships. That sounds like a good plan. What would Lou Fez do? I'm suffering from wrestling tournament fatigue in general. Yeah, I don't watch enough wrestling for that. NWA goal, I don't see how they can build a 73-year power without telling us who's on the card. Well, at least on social media, power is getting some news and information now. So I am glad about that. It would be nice if it was on the show, but they are at least getting out somewhere. And he continues, I don't see how they do it with the Champions Series on. Will they pause it? Yeah. No, they won't. They'll just keep doing it. John Mega goes, I think Hope or Aaron will win. I don't know. I would like Hope to win.
I think he's got a better built team.
Yeah. I'm going to talk about what my fear is when we get more into the card. Kikuchi goes, did Vern Gagne book this thing from the grave? Maybe. Kikuchi also goes, did we get any football matches or turkey matches? No, we did not. Wasn't that great? In fact, there were no special stipulation matches.
No.
There were no three ways. There were no disqualifications, no pinfalls count anywhere, no nothing. They were wrestling matches. Praise the wrestling gods for that.
Can I say something about that real quick?
You can.
Because, you know, the fact... We talk about how they're building for the 73rd or the lack thereof, and they're talking about, you know, the Champion Series. But I kind of feel like maybe this show should have done a 180, right? And maybe that the Champion Series should have been the first part of these tapings, and that way you could build up whatever the fallout is from the Champion Series would have played a part of the 73rd or whichever pay-per-view would be coming up next for them. So, like, if this is something they
play... Don't make sense.
Say what?
Don't try to make sense.
Well, I think that would have done a better job because you would have given an opportunity. What I like about the Champion Series, it is like a hard reboot where everyone still keeps their titles, but you're mixing it all up. So we're getting fresh matches, and we're not tied to any over-convoluted angles, any, like, weird storylines. I mean, sure, Nick Aldis doesn't like Trevor Murdoch. That's great. He doesn't need to like Trevor Murdoch. But the connection is still there, but they get this opportunity to have fresh matchups where Fred Rosser versus Trevor Murdoch wasn't in the cards 6 months ago. Now that match is perfectly normal to have as a main event for your show this past week. I like it for that reason. And if this would have been the first part of the season, maybe you could tease Fred Rosser, you know, becoming a heel on Trevor Murdoch. You could tease Genocide becoming more of a heel in alignment with Camille or in alignment with, you know, against somebody else. I just think it would have made a lot more sense. And I see James says that's too much logic there, Jay. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, basically what you're saying is 100% right. They should have reversed this. And just think of all the criticism would have saved from us if they had started with shows that had a lot of wrestling on it.
For sure.
But, But yeah, I mean, they really should. That would have been the right way to do it. But again, that means they would have had to have their card booked the way they were supposed to.
Yeah.
And I don't know that any of us give them credit for doing that. And so, I don't know. It's just kind of back to the comments, because I know we're getting behind. You brought up the 3 points don't make for a DQ don't make any sense. Yeah, we talked about that. Rikishi tries to compare us to some former owners of the NWA, and we're going to ignore that.
Thank you.
What would Luthez do? Says, I'm an NWA apologist, and I find this whole series thing a convoluted mess. Keep it simple, stupid. Well, yeah, that's one thing they did not do with the series, is keep it simple. DQ should lose points. We agree. We agree with that. Kikuchi, how are they going to book Lab?
Yeah, don't read that. No.
Probably not. They're not. Bingo on the St. Louis show. Show me state after all. That's right. You better do it right. James, I'd love to see them do a second show. Show from the Chase long term. So would I.
That's
James, too much logic, like you said. Dave Scooby, hope the champion series builds up a few feuds for 73. Trevor almost has to win unless he wants to step away. So that catches us up on the comments. Stop it, confusing. I think he did that on purpose.
And that brings us to the next match, right? You ready to move
right
on?
So the big match.
So we get
Punk. Beyond ready.
You know, they should have came up with team names, because it's hard to keep saying Pope and Sky or Team Pope Sky. Like, they should have given them a team name, like a house name, right? Like, you know, like Slytherin or Ball. Puff and Puff or whatever. But the
Ball's next been watching Harry Potter again.
I've never actually watched a movie the whole way through. I've seen bits and pieces, but I've never seen a Harry Potter movie or Lord of the Rings.
Well, 3 is really good if you're going to watch one. So.
So we get, next up, we get Pope Sky's Genocide versus Aldous Molina's Sky Blue. Now, this matchup mirrored a lot of their first match on Power. Or was that the pre-show? I think it was the pre-show. It was a good match. It was fun. You know, it is what it was supposed to be. You have Sky Blue, the smaller wrestler, using more aerial tactics, trying to use a more high-flying offense against this stalwart Genocide. You know, 5'10". You know, I'm not gonna even pretend to guess how much she weighs, but she's built similarly, not the same, but similar to Camille. So you get that powerhouse versus the featherweight, and what you get in the ring is pretty much what you see is Genocide basing for a lot of the high flying moves from Sky Blue. Some of the things in this match that kind of still ring true to me were the times where, like, Sky Blue tried to do a spinning heel kick in the corner, and Genocide just pushed the leg out of the way. Or no, she caught it. Excuse me, she caught the leg. Or when Sky Blue
went today.
What's that?
She said, like, nope, or not today, or something like that.
Right, and then there was a point where she jumped at her off the top rope, and she just kind of pushed her, and, like, totally just didn't sell the attack at all. So I like Genocide a lot. I think she's a great talent. I don't think she I think she's going to be one of these women that we're talking about in the next few years as the next big thing. Sky Blue has a hell of a lot of heart. She looked good in the ring. But again, Genocide is being built up as a behemoth in the NWA. That's why she was Pope Sky's number one pick. Match ends with a Genocide powerbomb. She basically just manhandled Sky Blue for about 10 minutes or 5 minutes. What was your thoughts about this match, DKM? What'd you think?
You know, if I had to rank them 1, 2, 3, and 4, this one's, you know, let's be honest, it's probably 4. It wasn't the best match on the show, but it wasn't a bad match. Mm-hmm. It was what it was supposed to be. It was like the monster, it's supposed to look like a monster. I don't even know if Sky Blue has a victory in NWA yet. So it was what it was. I was entertained by it. I was primarily entertained by some of Genocide's moves blocking Sky Blue. That being said, I don't think Sky Blue looked bad. There was never a point that I was sitting there going, oh my gosh, you know, why is she here? That looked terrible or whatever. So they both played their part.
Right.
In wrestling, that's what you want. You want people to play their part. They did. It was a solid, you know, 2-star match. It wasn't a dud. And, you know, hey. What happened after that? I don't remember.
Well, that's after that, J-Cal plugged the Discord page where we've been having a lot of great conversation as of late. I really would like to encourage everyone watching us to join our Discord server. The link is not only in the comments section, but it's also in the description of this episode of the Alliance blog. So we hope you guys will join us on the Discord server, where we're keeping that NWA conversation going on that format throughout the week. Hope you guys will take advantage of that and join us there. But that leads to the next match, where we have Team Aaron and Taryn. They present JTG, Jay the God, versus Idol and Camille's Mims. Now, this match was also very similar to the Latimer and Marche Rocket match. It was a lot more competitive than I thought it was going to be. And again, Mims has been a talent who was used mostly as enhancement, but has had a few key victories on the show. Really kind of came up against JTG and really looked good even in defeat. Now, we know that JTG recently challenged for the national title, and I expect a lot of big things going forward for Jay the God. But in this match, Mims looked really good. And in this match, they put on a pretty good match. I was pleasantly surprised by it. Like you said early on, DK, there wasn't a clear blowaway match that was amazing, but there wasn't a match that was bad either. And this was certainly, like, right there, more good than bad. The match ends when JTG hits the Brooklyn's Edge, similar to the Razor's Edge, and gets the 1-2-3. I got to ask you, what did you think about the match? What did you think about the chemistry between the two? And what do you think for both men?
It was probably my favorite match on the show.
Same.
I loved how well Mims looked. I mean, and that's him. You know, that's him learning, that's him growing, that's him becoming a better wrestler. And I thought he looked really good. And I think if the NWA is smart, this is somebody who you would look at and go, we could develop him and we could turn him into a, if not a top star, at least a, you know, next level star.
I agree.
And somebody who, you know, could certainly be considered a credible TV champion, you know, within a few months. And I think this was a thing. Again, there wasn't you weren't surprised by who won, but I was very surprised by how competitive it was. They kind of blew the ending twice, which the first time I didn't mind because, you know what, things happen in the real world.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen boxers fall from throwing a punch, MMA guys slip, you know, things happen.
Guy breaks an ankle right in the middle of a fight. Who knew?
Yeah. You know, so second time just looked like he didn't get a good set for it when he executed it. But the match was good. I enjoyed it. Again, big men doing big men things to each other. It was believable. And I don't know what else to say other than I pretty much enjoyed it. So, I mean, you people out there that watched the show, I mean, was there anything that you didn't like, you know, in the first three matches? Because I don't really have anything.
No, and that's the thing, like, on the Discord server, somebody said, oh, I can't wait to hear DK say some good things about the NWA, and it's like, hey, man, we say good things about the NWA all the time. It's just, you know, when it's bad, we're also going to tell you that it's bad. This episode was pretty solid, and maybe one of the best episodes of the new era of the NWA, a new era of power. Again, there was not a lot of... There was nothing wrong. There was nothing bad. And like DK said earlier, we could nitpick stuff that we didn't like, but for the most part, like, the show was good. It had a good energy. The crowd seemed to be good. Watching it, I heard a lot of good things. I wasn't able to watch it until today. And watching it, I was like, yeah, this was a very solid show. There was nothing bad about it. In the comments section, Terry McDermott says, Mims and JTG are both loved, and I was for whoever won. So Terry McDermott says that, you know, he was happy with either guy winning that match. Sean Mega says, JTG looks phenomenal. What Would Luthez Do says that JTG has won him over. And I think, you know, I look back to how JTG wrestled when he was in the WWE, because back then I actually did watch Raw and SmackDown. And as part of Crime Time, like, he had the silly gimmick, but, you know, you didn't really see the wrestling to go with it. But this is a guy that trained at Ohio Valley. He's a guy that was trained by, you know, Danny Davis and I believe, who'd they say his trainer was? Oh, gosh. DK, do you know? Was it Sonny Rogers?
Well, I would have if he hadn't asked.
Was it Sonny Rogers?
No, was it Rip Hawk? I don't know. It was whoever came in after Cornette, I think.
Regardless, he looked great. And for you guys who are saying that he looks good, yeah, he was very good. And I could see big things for both men. But JTG, I think, you know, post 73rd, he might be looking at a feud with the title. Kikuchi said Rip Rogers. So did Dave Scooby. Rip Rogers. I was saying Sonny Rogers. You're right, Rip Rogers. Dave Scooby also points out it was great seeing wrestling, or wrestlers wrestling. Love having the teams out supporting their team. I thought that was a great little piece that they added to it as well. I was kind of baffled that the team captains weren't out there as well. I know we had a few of them on the broadcast table, but like, you didn't see Melina and Nick out there talking strategy before the match. You didn't see Pope and Sky out there getting the team warmed up, and maybe that would have been kind of fun to see too. But again, not the end of the world. I'm not going to nitpick things they should have done, because the show overall was just really solid. And that takes us to the main event. That takes us to Team Aldis and Melina versus Team Pope Sky, and we get Fred Rosser, no days off, now exclusive with New Japan of America, taking on the former national champion Trevor Murdoch. And this was a pretty fun match. I don't know that I ever saw the primetime players take on Cade and Murdoch. I think they passed in time. I don't think they ever faced off before. So this is the first time for me seeing these two wrestlers in the same ring. And it was a pretty good match. Again, nothing wrong. It looked like Trevor had the match won and could have went for the three count, and instead chose to use the submission hold. DK, what were your thoughts on this one?
It was different than the rest of it. This was a little more kind of brawlish, brutal, whereas the others were more wrestling matches. This one was kind of more of a hoss fight, which I think whenever you have Trevor Murdoch in the ring, you're more likely to end up with a hoss match.
For sure.
Although he can't wrestle. So... I enjoyed it, but it was probably three. So for those of you who can't figure out my rankings, it was Mims and JTG was one, Latimer and Rocket were two, Murdoch and Bronson were three, and the ladies were four. But it was so low in between each of them. I kind of hate giving those rankings, but just, and those are 100% personal, by the way. What entertained me, what I enjoyed, what I liked. I did like that he went for the submission. Probably one of the things that may have influenced the way I thought, I did not like him in all this mouthing back. And we'll talk a little bit more about this in a bit, but I know all this had, you know, was gone from a couple of episodes and was back last week and was there this week, but I'm really tired of his voice. and it's an honest thing. I mean, I mean that. It's not a thing. I'm actually tired of hearing it. And he's kind of gotten to the point where he's kind of repeating the same things over again because he's there so much and everything. And we'll talk some about this a little bit later as we're going to do some fantasy booking. It was a good show. I was happy with the show. The only thing that worried me, two things worry me about future shows. We talked about the DQ thing with the plugs. One of the big things they kind of kept repeating over and over again tonight was how none of the teammates were interfering. So I kind of have a fear that may settle into it. And then my other fear is that Aldis and Molina had 0 points. So, you know, in the first bracket they split, in the second bracket it was both, all the team dropped both of them, so it's 0 points. I'm a little bit worried about a comeback, you know, where they end up being behind but still somehow come back and win for Screwjobs and stuff like that. I would, again, this is personal, and there's a booking reason for it. I'd really like all this team not to win at all. I'd really kind of like them to get knocked out of the thing altogether. And, but hey, I enjoyed the show. It was the type of show that makes me look forward to next week. So it's been a while since I could say that. Yo, Chris. And, Adam, I'm typing it in. And, I don't know. Jay, what were your overall thoughts?
Well, first of all, Terry said something that totally slipped my mind, but I think it should be brought up. And whether the NWA did this intentionally or not, if they did it intentionally, this is a good way to do a slow build for storylines. Because obviously when these were taped, Fred Rosser wasn't under contract exclusive to New Japan of America. So we didn't have these expectations of of him not being available after the set of tapings. But on this episode, Fred Rosser and Trevor Murdoch had their match, and it was a Haas fight like you pointed out. But what Terry mentioned is that back a few weeks ago, they had had that altercation with JTG when Rosser threw in the towel, and Murdoch called him out on it. And, you know, I know it's a minor detail, but if you think about it, they could have extrapolated that into a storyline where, you know, eventually Rosser could be like, hey, Murdoch, get out of my business. And that could have led to something. And then the altercation, of course, the matchup this week, combined with the altercation from a few weeks ago, you have something you could have started building from. Now, obviously, that's not going to happen, but they certainly could have. And I think that's kind of interesting. And I think that's why this series is going to be so much fun, because they're going to have an opportunity to have these different styles of guys who hadn't been in the match, haven't had matches before, and maybe this can create some new storyline. And stuff doesn't have to be so convoluted, because they're now their storyline is that I just don't like you because you beat me last time, and now I want to get that win back. Overall, we have a ranking now. We have Team Pope Sky with the victories with Genocide and Murdoch, and now have 10 points, so they're in the lead. Camille and Idol have 5 points with Latimer's victory, Aaron and Taryn also has 5 points with JTG's victory, and Aldous and Melina are goose-egging it. They have no points at all. Next week, matches haven't yet been announced, but I imagine we're going to see some more of this column A, column B, column A, column B, like they did this week. So we'll see some new matches, and overall, I really enjoyed it. And if they did every episode of Power like this, again, I would be very happy with the show. I didn't watch it live, but I heard a lot of good things about the show, which kind of was a little bit intimidating because I've seen people say a lot of positive things about the show, and then I've been very disappointed by it. But this episode lived up to the hype that other people were giving it. I was very happy with it. And, you know, the next matches are going to be a lot of fun too. And then I'm not sure how things are going to change up. You know, earlier, DK, you said, well, we don't have we didn't have any triple threat matches, we didn't have any specialty matches. I don't know, maybe that's what happens in the next round. But so far it's been straight up booking. So far nothing really silly, just straight up wrestling, and it's great that they're getting the positive reaction that they deserve.
I agree. So, Mr. Callie Kaylee.
Just don't call me late for dinner.
Yeah. Tell me, Mr. I was on the road forever and ever and a day. What about the North Carolina matches?
So, I'm glad you brought that up. I was on the road. I was in Santa Fe, New Mexico, of all places. And I got the notification on my phone that the NWA was going live on Instagram. Did anyone else get that? Did anyone else jump onto Instagram? I jumped on and I watched the match from Charlotte. You know, and the Doty, who sometimes is in our pre-party, Doty has been a longtime NWA fan. He's from Indonesia, and he's been following the NWA almost as closely as I have, maybe even closer, to be quite honest. And he pointed out, I forgot, that venue is the same place that Greg Price used to run those NWA shows that he used to do back in the day. I think NWA Beginnings is what he called it, I think. Maybe I'm getting my shows mixed up. But he did those NWA Hall of Fame shows, so he had filmed the Adam Pearce versus Brian Danielson at that same venue. So that world title has been defended there quite often. So that venue, albeit kind of an odd choice, it has some very historic significance for the modern day National Wrestling Alliance. These things I wasn't aware of, and Doty pointed those out. So we had Kenzie Page versus Camille. I did not get to see any of that match, but I heard it was pretty much all Camille. But I did get to see the Trevor Murdoch challenge Nick Aldis, and I gotta say, wrestling 5 times a year, defending the 10 pounds of gold, certainly was visible. Chris pointed out Legends Fan Fest. Thanks, Chris. The match itself, I think, was very bland. I feel like they mailed it in. There's maybe 50 people in attendance, and if that's the kind of obviously they're not going to draw that same crowd in St. Louis when they're near sellout for the 73rd anniversary show. But if that's the kind of performance they deliver on that pay-per-view, I think a lot of people are going to be disappointed. I was very disappointed to see, Aldis, who looks like a million bucks. I mean, he just didn't look like he had any gas in the tank. He just wasn't moving. He was slow. It looked like he was winded. And look, I'm not an athlete. If you put me in a 10-minute match, I'd be winded too. I'd probably be thrown up in the ring. But he's the world's heavyweight champion, and I'm just some fat guy in California who talks about wrestling. I was very disappointed to see that. Now, Trevor Murdoch, again, he's never been a 5-tool athlete. He's never been in the best shape of his life. And he's never been Nick Aldis shape. So I wouldn't imagine that he would be as quick as a mongoose either. But the match just lacked a lot, in my opinion. And I watched it twice, and I didn't enjoy it. DK, what were your thoughts?
Well, to go back to the Camille Kenzie Page, just I actually saw that, and I didn't think that one was bad. I thought it, again, a little bit like the genocide Sky Blue. You knew who was going to win, and you knew one person was going to be more prominent than the other. Kenzie got some few good moves in. Because you're funny. It was good for what it was. They didn't click. And I don't know fully what the reason was. And it happens sometimes. There's just a night where wrestlers don't click. It wasn't a Styles clash. And I'm not talking about AJ's finish. I mean, it wasn't a clash of styles. But it wasn't, certainly wasn't as good as their first one on Power. It wasn't as good as their pay-per-view match. And they just, I don't know what it was, but that night they didn't click. Maybe somebody was sick. Maybe there were too many allergies. Maybe they didn't care. I mean, like, I can't tell you. It did surprise me that all just looked winded after the match. So, you know, maybe he's, you know, obviously looking at him, the guy's fit. Maybe he needs cardio. I don't know. Or, you know, maybe it's just one of those nights where things just don't go anybody's way.
Yeah. And look, I mean, if you guys ever go back and watch some of the old Alliance Guys podcasts, I mean, I remember episode 9 of Power. I was over the moon with that match that Aldis had with Trevor Murdoch, and they both looked really good. And now, granted, a 5-minute TV match is different than a 10-minute, you know, independent wrestling show match. But at the end of the day, I felt like, you're right, there was something not connecting. And again, maybe it was seasonal allergies. Maybe it was the buffet before the show wasn't up to health safety regulations. It wasn't a good match. And the post promo from Murdoch, who says, "I still want to be world champion even though I lost." I mean, to me, like, now I'm siding with Aldis, right? Because Trevor Murdoch, you've had an opportunity to win the title, and Aldis cheated, and you didn't win. Fair enough. You got your rematch, and it wasn't a chair that stopped you from winning that match. It was you just getting pinned, or tapping out, excuse me. And for that to happen,
well, getting pinned.
Oh, he did get pinned. Excuse me. Sorry. For him to lose the match cleanly just shows, like, what I mean. Why would you book it that way? Why would you put your top challenger, who's supposed to win at the 73rd, or at least be the challenge at 73rd, why would you put him in a position where he loses? And so now he's trying to appeal to the dealer and say, "Hey, you know, I know you need the stakes to be high, so I'm offering my career versus the title." I just think that you're booking yourself into a corner. And they did the same thing with Marty Scurll at the Crockett Cup that was supposed to happen in 2020, where they painted themselves into this corner that if you don't lose, you know, if Aldis doesn't lose, then you're going to lose Trevor Murdoch, or you're going to you know, have to pay the fans tickets. It's convoluted. It's stupid. How about just the fact that Trevor Murdoch wants to challenge for the title? Why does he have to throw his career in there? It frustrates me. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, the NWA is trying to spin it in that they need the rubber match because Trevor Murdoch really won the first one. I mean, he didn't, but he really, really did. You know, you don't realize it. If, you know, Aldis hadn't hit a referee with the chair where he should have been, you know, indefinitely suspended, fined $250,000 and stripped of the title. But hey, referee's decision is final, except for when we want to use video or some other reason to invalidate it. So, but, you know, Murdoch won the first one, and now Aldis won the second one. Now we need the rubber match. Unknown? I mean, and it's not like Murdoch barely won this match, or the match was so great and so competitive and so, wow, we can't believe it. We want to see who, you know, we want to see another match, see if we, who the real winner is. Bend them. Clean. In the middle of the ring. So, I don't want to see another match. So now we're going to do one of those stipulations, like I said, one of those in the corner stipulations. You practice in the corner. And, you know, if Murdoch doesn't win, he's done. Until he wrestles somewhere else or comes back 6 months later from another stipulation. And all this is there at the world time. Here's my thing. I think the time has come to take the title off all this. And I'm talking more than just whatever we think of the thing. He's been overexposed. And there are ways that you can protect somebody like Aldis in a loss. It doesn't have to be a screw job or something like that. One, I remember a match between Harley Race and Kevin Von Erich. And Kevin, you know, at some point went out of the ring, and somewhere in the fall he hurt his shoulder. So the rest of the match was basically a one-armed Kevin, because he couldn't use his one arm because his shoulder was hurt, against Harley Race. And he was still, Race still having a hard time beating. Finally, David Von Erich comes in, gets Kevin disqualified, and that set up the Harley Race-David feud. And, well, my computer screen went black. Surprised me. And so you could have Aldis get injured in the match, unrelated to anything in particular, lose it. But my thing is, I can deal with Nick Aldis Murdoch 3, but I sure as hell don't want a 4. So if Murdoch wins, I don't want a hot shot. I don't want the next pay-per-view or some match in South Dakota or whatever.
Gary, Indiana.
You know, Gary, Indiana, which I guess we need to talk a little bit about that after this. We need to move in a different direction. And so in my fantasy booking that I was talking to Jay about just before the show, this is just Devin booking. Nothing special about it. If, you know, someone say, hey Devin, you're gonna book the storyline for the NWA, what would you do?
Wait. And now a view from DKM.
Oh, thank you. A view from DKM. I'm currently gonna do my column on the air tonight. And I think the issue, I think for me, what I would do, all this can be injured, his knee, his elbow, his shoulder, his neck, his teeth, I don't care, something. Gets injured during the match. Murdoch wins clean, but there's still that out for Aldis of, you know, if he hadn't gone flying through the ropes and got his leg tangled, and, you know, he could have won. So, and then what that does is not only does it give you the new champion, which the NWA kind of desperately needs at the moment, but it takes Aldis out of the picture for a while. And as, you know, Jim Cornette likes to say on his show, how can I miss you if you won't go away?
That's a great one.
And, you know, this was one of the benefits of the territories. Is that, especially if you're wrestling in Mid-South, you can disappear for 6 months and go wrestle in Georgia. go wrestle in Texas, or go up to Kansas City, you know, over to Florida, do something, and you get out of the area, and then you come back, you learn a new move, and you come back. That's funny. You learn a new move, you come back, and you can either come back as a face or come back as a heel, or, you know, whatever, the same, or switch sides, but you come back and now you're a little bit fresher.
Freddie Blassie was a legend at doing that. I mean, he left SoCal, the Grand Olympic Auditorium. He left that era as a heel. Most hated guy in LA. I mean, literally, people were trying to take knives and stab him on his way to the ring. He goes to Georgia for Georgia Championship Wrestling, spends some time out there. When he comes back to California, when he comes back to Los Angeles, you've got John Tolos, who's kind of the heel of the area. He's the big bad guy of the area. And Blassie comes back, and he's welcomed and well-received as a babyface. And that blood feud was one of the highest drawing angles for the Grand Olympic of all time. And it was that simple formula of, okay, you've overstayed your welcome, go do something else and come back later.
Exactly. And this is kind of what you do with these things. You gotta refresh. So wasn't kidding when I said I'm kind of tired of Aldis's voice. And I'm an Aldis fan. But I'm kind of tired of his voice at this particular moment. And so get him off the air for 6 months. And he doesn't have to be completely off. He can do a couple of follow-ups to see how he's rehabbing or whatever. But, you know, the trick is, and those are like pre-taped video things at home, at the gym, whatever, at a doctor's office. You don't have him there. He can be at the show behind the scenes running whatever he wants to. But you don't see him on camera. You don't talk about him. This gives Murdoch a chance to, you know, defend his title against whatever Master's name is in the NWA.
Adonis,
that's right. And so, you know, he can have a couple of challengers. And then, again, view from DKM, what DKM would do is he would put the title on Thomas Lapp.
Ooh.
And so,
ooh.
So
is Kevin watching at home? Because he just popped right there.
Probably. So you put the title on Latimer after 4 or 5 months. And then when Aldis is coming back, this is kind of where you get that Sting for Horseman thing, or Evolution when Randy Orton won the title, or whatever, with a little bit of a twist. You have Nick Aldis come back. And Nick Aldis is ready to challenge for the title. You know, he's been out, he's rebuilt. You know, he and Latimer are teammates. It's going to stay within the strictly business. They need to have the match. So it looks like, you know, you're going to get the two of them do it. You have the match. Latimer cheats to win. Aldis gets a little bit upset. And Latimer beats the shit out. Just pummels him. He goes after whatever he injured. Those injured teeth. Or those injured knee or whatever. And he goes after them. He's smacking him with the chair or whatever. And Mickie James comes out to try and do it. And Camille comes out and spears her into the next week. And so then, you know, Chris Adonis comes out. He's checking on Aldis and looking at Latimer, like, what the hell are you doing? And stuff like that. And he, you know, helps Aldis get back up to the feet. And then he nails him. And so now you got all the heels beating up Aldis. And no one's coming to save Aldis because everybody hates him, right? Until finally Trevor Murdoch or somebody, you know, comes out with a chair and runs everybody off. He's beaten up, and now Aldis can go away for about another month. But now he's back. When he makes that comeback, now he's back. Now he's the face. Now he's somebody you want to see challenging for the title. Now he's somebody who you want to see going back. And, you know, the money is in the checks. That, always remember that in wrestling, people. The money is in the checks. Money's not in the title changes. It's in the checks. And so now you set up something. Now you got something going. Now you've taken all this, the guy that everybody is sick of, and the fans want to see him win the title. So that's booking by DKM, a view from DKM, copyright 2021.
So, I mean, that's actually, I see a lot of value in that. I mean, there's a lot of parallels to Flair, you know, when Flair started feuding with Terry Funk, and it was the JTEX Corporation, if I'm not mistaken, where Muda and Terry Funk were kind of working together, causing hell for Flair. And Sting and Flair had this uneasy alliance, and they became a team, only for Flair to just turn on Sting the first opportunity he got. It's different, but it just has that same kind of energy. And I think that would be good for the NWA. I keep talking about how the NWA has painted themselves into this corner. We're celebrating 1,000-plus days of Nick Aldis being world champion, but you know, a little birdie told me that that title was supposed to change hands back at the Crockett Cup in 2020. I mean, this is all forethought and afterthought and everything else, but you know, we wouldn't be celebrating Aldis being champion had that, you know, had a global worldwide pandemic had not shut the NWA down for, you know, almost a year. So, I mean,
we were supposed to lose the title at the premiere of Primetime Live.
Yes, that was also a rumor that I've heard, but it wasn't supposed to be against who he ended up facing. But you know, these are speculations. These are rumors. These aren't facts. I'm not scoops. I don't have all the real news. I'm just telling you what I've heard with my ear on the street. But with that being said, we are running out of time. I did want to talk about some of the breaking news that happened yesterday. The AEW announced something kind of interesting. Now, this relationship with the NWA and AEW, I believed was coming to an end. I believed that now with Thunder Rosa exclusive, I guess not exclusive, but officially signed to AEW and out of NWA contract, I thought that was the end for the NWA-AEW relationship, especially now that you have Mickey James going on Impact Wrestling and courting Deonna Purrazzo to come make an appearance at the Empowered pay-per-view. I kind of thought that was the end of it. But Tony Khan's forbidden door has been kicked open and is literally being propped open now by the Burke. And I'm talking about that NWA World's Women's Championship, because apparently AEW is going to have an eliminator tournament for a shot at the NWA Women's Championship. Now, I'm not a big AEW fan. I don't watch the product, although I'm getting closer and closer to doing it, because it just looks like they're doing such crazy stuff. I mean, you've got the IWGP US Champion title changing hands on an AEW show. You've got the Generation Ace Tanahashi coming to challenge Lance Archer for the IWGP US Championship on an AEW program for a match that's going to happen in Los Angeles. I mean, it's getting crazy. It's getting hard to keep up with everything. But it looks like AEW is going to have a tournament to have a shot at Camille's Women's World Championship, the Burke. Now, the interesting thing about that is, you know, they haven't specified when this tournament is going to... I mean, we know that the first match happens next week when Allie, the Bunny, challenging Layla Hirsch. I know a lot of the MPW crowd is very over with legit Layla Hirsch. And she's been making some waves in AEW. But I think this is, it's interesting, at the very least, that the Women's World Championship is still being talked about in AEW. And now there's potentially a shot for Camille to, you know, appear on AEW programming as the Women's World Champion. And as just pointed out in a room by John Farmer, Camille defended the title twice this weekend, that RCW show. in San Antonio was a title match. So actually, our women's world champion had successfully defended the title twice. But I think it's interesting to talk about and at least to think about what is next with this AEW-NWA relationship. And are we going to see Camille appear in AEW, or are we going to see stars from AEW start matriculating into the Empower pay-per-view? I mean, what are your thoughts, DK?
I have a feeling some of this probably has to probably negotiated as part of the Thunder Rosa release and sign. Look, Tony Khan has stated he's basically willing to work with anybody, but let's never get off the idea that Tony Khan's willing to work with anybody, but his guys are going to win. that's kind of the way it goes. And looks they can get some talent for Empower out of this. Good for them. I don't know. It would seem weird to have matches for the see who was going to challenge for the NWA Women's title if you don't bring the NWA Women's Champion in. So pretty sure Billy has her locked up in the contract for a while. Certainly needs to, because trust me, as she develops and she's vastly improved between AEW and WWE's one of them is going to snap her up.
Without a doubt. She's a very talented female, although she's not the pinnacle yet. I mean, you have to admit that every time she stepped in the ring, she's gotten better. Promos are better. Kevin pointed that out a couple weeks ago. Her promos are getting better. Her in-ring work is getting better. I mean, she looked strong in those matches with Thunder Rosa. She looked strong in those matches with Serena Deeb. And I don't get me wrong, those are both two really incredible women athletes. But we're putting Camille in that same sentence. And I really feel like that should be celebrated for Camille and for the NWA. That a woman like her, who's still, you know, she's fairly new to the business. She hasn't had a whole lot of in-ring action, but she's getting better. And I think that's where it's got to go. You know, that's if she ends up in AEW or WWE, it's going to be after some time spent in the NWA carrying that division. And I know there's, you know, they're bringing in more women every day. I mean, this whole Empower pay-per-view is about finding more women to fill that NWA roster. But I think it's at the very least, it's exciting to me to see that AEW wants to continue that relationship. You know, one of the things I always said about the NWA going back in the last 15 years is that the NWA is alive as long as people are watching it, as long as the title is being defended, as long as it's being seen. And in you know, for what people call the wilderness years, when the title wasn't seen that often, I mean, Dan Severn, although he didn't have any defenses, brought the belt to the UFC, he brought the belt to the WWE, and that carries weight. It meant something. And for the NWA's Women's World Championship, the Burke, to be highly featured on AEW programming while they have their own championship, I think that really means something. And at the end of the day, you're right. At the end of the day, Tony Khan's biggest concern is Tony Khan's wrestling promotion, AEW. But that doesn't mean that the NWA can't benefit from some publicity. They can benefit from some more eyeballs. And basically, a talent like Camille can benefit from being in the ring with some of the women from AEW. Do you agree or disagree?
I mostly agree. You got to be careful. The way they handled the women's title so far was pretty good. I mean, Thunder Rosa was treated mostly well in AEW. Of course, Deeb, you know, had a good run as champion and everything. Were you kind of in the mix there with the women there? Honestly, AEW doesn't book women's wrestling very well in general, but at least the two people that held the title were a very talented wrestler and a very talented wrestler trainer. So they got some good matches out of people who didn't always have good matches. And there's something to be said to get noticed, but we also got to be realistic to the sense that very few people who watch AEW, especially those that watch for Kenny Omega or the Bucks or whatever, they're not necessarily going to like what we just spent all this time praising.
That's true.
You know, they're not really into that type of wrestling. And, you know, they're wrong, but that's fine. So, you know, everybody said when it was on ROH, oh, it's on ROH, sir. ROH fans didn't care. ROH fans went on boards and said they didn't care. You know, it didn't mean anything to them. They didn't, for ROH, they couldn't understand why you were having NWA people. They weren't going to go watch the pay-per-views. They weren't going to.
Well, I do want to point this out, and this is the dichotomy here, right? Because when we talk about the Burke and how well AEW's treated the Burke, let's go back to All In. 2018? All In?
18, 17, something like
that. 2018, Cody versus Nick. One of the highest talked about match on that pay-per-view. And although it wasn't the main event, many people attribute to that match as being the main event. Cody wins the title, and hundreds of thousands of eyeballs are now placed on that 10 pounds of gold. I mean, that 10 pounds of gold series leading up to it had so many people talking about the NWA. And we're talking about 2017, Billy Corgan purchases the NWA, becomes the owner president, solidifies the brand as one. They have, they start appearing on Championship Wrestling from Hollywood with Tim Storm and Nick Aldis. The ball is rolling. There's a little bit of buzz, but not much. Right, we get to All In. Dave Marquez is taking that 10 pounds of gold to China. Are we talking about that? No, we're talking about All In. We're talking about Cody versus Nick, and that was the headlines: Cody versus Nick for the 10 pounds of gold. You got The Rock congratulating Cody Rhodes on winning the 10 pounds of gold. People were talking about the NWA that hadn't been talking about it in a long time. Fast forward to the 70th anniversary show, just a month and a half later. And that place was sold out. The Asylum, the TNA Asylum is sold out because people were there to see Cody Rhodes defend the 10 pounds of gold to Nick Aldis. Now, I'll admit, after that match, a lot of the buzz kind of started to evaporate for the NWA because Cody now was no longer in the title picture. But there were many, many eyeballs that came from that All Elite world, that Ring of Honor world, that alternative pro wrestling, the independent wrestling that became fans of the NWA because that Cody and Aldis match. You can't deny it.
Actually, I kind of do.
Oh.
Look, here's my thing. Cody going for the same title that his dad held was big thing. They're doing this big thing to prove they can draw 10,000 fans. And, you know, let's be honest, if it had been Cody going for the ROH title or whatever, they would have sold the same number of tickets. If he was going for Bob's Wrestling, Backyard Wrestling Federation championship, they would have sold the same number of tickets. But there was a historic idea of a father-son NWA show. People were big for Cody.
Sure.
And people were big for Cody winning the NWA title, since his dad had it. But like you said, 6 months after Cody dropped the belt, I think the NWA is basically back to the same group of fans it had before Cody got in there.
See, this is where I disagree with you.
You know, yeah, there are a few that come and a few that go, but I don't think they'll, I mean, and remember, the NWA didn't really do anything to follow up on it.
No.
I mean, they talked about the pop-up shows. They didn't do them. They talked about, you know, this and that. There wasn't really anything going on. They certainly didn't do anything to maintain momentum. And, but you know, you got to know your audience. You know, if you want to, you know, you got to know, if you bring in fans, you got to make sure that you don't have fans leaving because you're changing your style and stuff like that, unless you can bring in, you know, more than you're going to lose. And so, ultimately, I don't know that it did them that much good. I think a lot of hardcore fans, of course, were excited when they got the TV thing. You know, even if it was a YouTube stuff. But, you know, I pointed out then, I'm going to know again. So, been channeling my inner Kirk Classic. But, right. And it's just, I don't feel like there were any more people watching when they were doing their ROH. I don't feel like there were any more people watching NWA when they were doing their ROH thing. There was no evidence that ROH fans followed Marty Scurll.
No, but I would point out this, and we're going to wrap up the show here in just a minute, but I do want to point out that if you... Now, our Discord, our fans have been pretty much lifelong fans, diehard NWA fans, and that's legit. I'm not saying that to blow smoke up anyone's butt, but I bet most of you here who are in this chat right now were on my message board 10 years ago. And some of you that aren't have been following the brand closely regardless. But I bet if you were to go to, say, this is the Pro Wrestling Podcast, and you check out the fans there, the NWA fans there that, you know, didn't follow the NWA as closely, if at all, prior to Billy Corgan's purchasing the NWA. I mean, Gary Horn has said it himself, the head honcho, he didn't even watch the NWA until he heard about Billy Corgan buying it. And that's what started a lot of this change, right? And so most of the fans, I can't say most, I don't have specific numbers, but I'm saying there's a good chunk of fans who weren't following the NWA until Cody came around. And I think that a lot of that has changed.
I'm not saying nobody, but I think here would be my thing. If there were 5,000 people watching before Cody, there were probably 5,000 watching after Cody. If there were 10,000, it was 10,000. Okay, Gary Horn didn't watch beforehand, but there are probably people who used to watch the dump. I mean, I know, because I know individuals specifically, sure, which you always got to be careful of. But I mean, I know people who do not watch the NWA anymore because they hate Power and they hate what it did, you know, how it was being run and everything like that.
Wow.
And so I don't feel like the NWA is in a certainly not significant better situation. And probably just overall not probably about the same as they were beforehand. And you know, let's be a little bit honest, if you believe the rumors, Cody kind of screwed them, because the rumors were always supposed to, that it was supposed to be a trilogy with Cody. And in fact, according to some, Cody was supposed to win the first two. Cody was actually supposed to win at the anniversary show. And then he wasn't supposed to drop the title till the third match. But apparently that got changed somewhere along the way. Some people say Cody didn't even want to do the anniversary show, but was contracted to, so...
You know, one of the rumors...
No, he doesn't watch the NWA anymore.
One of the rumors I heard was that the third and final match was supposed to take place at Madison Square Garden when Ring of Honor went to Madison Square Garden. However, that was all about the same time that the contracts for Cody and the Young Bucks and Adam Page all came up. And so that they weren't there for that show, and they knew that they weren't going to be there for that show. And that's why they ended up doing the switch at the 70th anniversary, as opposed to where it was supposed to be, the Madison Square Garden. But could you imagine that? I mean, that's something else to talk about on a different episode. But could you imagine Aldis winning the 10 pounds of gold at MSG? That would have been pretty electric. But we're up against it, guys. We like to keep the show right at about an hour and a half, and we're a little bit past that. So we're going to wrap things up again. I do appreciate you guys being here, hanging out with us on a Thursday.
Thanks again for tuning in to the Alliance Blog Podcast, a presentation of alliance-wrestling.com. We genuinely appreciate your support. Would you consider subscribing so you won't miss any future episodes? We'd also like to remind you that we do a live stream every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific on YouTube at the Alliance Blog. And you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Tumblr, TikTok, and Twitch at the Alliance Blog. Remember, absorb what is useful, reject what is useless, add what is essentially your own. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.